Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Hi, this is Gene Sally.
And Machi.
And we're going to do our regular podcast this week, except it'll be completely different because we stopped at the Ontario Linux Fest.
It will be actually very, very different because you will hear, it will be primarily an interview with one of the people we had a pleasure interviewing at the Linux Fest.
Yeah, it was fun for him. I mean, after we unshackled him, he got up and ran away. But I think while we were recording, it was okay. But we lasted. I guess Ontario Linux Fest. It's a 30-second thing for that. It's a great get together. There had to be 500 or 600 people there.
Well, there was
like by the bus
huge crowds.
Yeah, I know you got there around noon, right? I had to get there early to get the booth set up because you told me to get there early, get the booth set up and everything. And
well, I was just trying to get the missing pieces for our booth.
But I am at Office Depot and it was like noon and then you finally got it.
There's no Office Depot in Canada, at least not that I could find.
Oh, so what were you doing?
Staples, man.
But anyway, so we were at the Ontario Linux Fest and we interviewed a lot of folks. The guy we're gonna that we talked to is Mad Dog Hall, and he was a great, he was a fantastic interview. We had a lot of time. He was really generous with us, and he gave us a fairly long interview. And we're gonna try to get as much of it in this episode as we can. And at the same time, we interviewed some other great folks as well, folks from Red Hat. Folks, matter of fact, we interviewed someone. I don't know if it'll make it on our podcast, but she was from Goodwill and talked about Goodwill Industries and talked about the positive impact of Linux. So we got some embedded people that worked with embedded, and then we got some other people that didn't really work with Linux in an embedded context, but nonetheless, we're doing really worthwhile things with Linux.
We actually talked to people that work with Linux in general, not embedded necessarily. So there was this distinction also between embedded Linux and just a desktop Linux. But we also talked to people about, not Linux necessarily, but Java.
Can't forget that.
We interviewed, talked to us about Java, which was very interesting. So we're definitely going to spend some time and do some of the post-production of some of that material, and we'll post that on our site as soon as possible.
But sure.
Today, without further ado, let's jump to the interview with Mad Dog Hall.
So great. What do you guys want to talk about?
Well, we do a podcast for embedded Linux, and so a lot of the folks that listen in for us have questions or problems or concerns or pain points around getting Linux to run on a small device. Small meaning resources, right? And small also usually meaning size as well.
Yes.
And small to me is like 4K of memory and stuff like that, right? And
well, it's today's small, right?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
See, that's a point. And things keep changing, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, it's the economics of the whole situation where if you start to look at what manufacturers are doing with memory, they say, hey, what we're doing now is we're making the 8-megabyte chips. And if you want a 4-megabyte chip, it's going to cost you more than the 8-megabyte chip.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're not set up for that. And if we have to disrupt our run of 8-megabyte chips, it's going to cost us more money. So here, here's an 8-megabyte chip. Just use half of it. Don't tell us you're using the other half.
Yeah.
When you see that would be possible, just chop the chip in half. And
oh, yeah. It'd be nice if you could do that. But, you know, electrically speaking, that's a disaster. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're seeing the same too in the microcontroller arena. So, we work with a company that creates an ARM chip. It's an ARM system on a chip, and for all intents and purposes, this one die will have serial. It'll have the network on it, and it'll be a ARM core, and that's it. And so that's what their production run is. So it doesn't really matter if you're not using one or two or three pieces of that. It's, $8 a chip no matter what.
That's right. That's right. You know, and on the other hand, there are some people that are producing so much of stuff that just the savings of 50 cents or a dollar, and then there's the opposite side of it. You got so much surface area to die, if you're using it for these things, if these things are taking up that surface area, then you could be using it for something else.
That's a really good point that Mad Dog makes, and I completely agree. The specs on an embedded system in the past, even the past 10 years, have, they're a different class of machine, right? I mean, you do see the system on a chip, and that's typically what people work with. But the really interesting effect, Maciej, is that even within that ever-expanding machine power memory context, there's still a desire to make it as small as possible within that window.
I agree. And I don't think that that's going to ever change, because by minimizing that footprint, that solution, you're managing not only the speed of the system, but also complexity. You're managing the power consumption.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably going to have less tasks that are executing in the background.
Yeah. So, well, I was at a customer, right, and they were putting this equipment inside a defense vehicle. All this is unnamed, right? I'm sure if I say the wrong things in the air, the black helicopters are coming.
Yeah, but I'm going to say beep.
Yeah. So it was a defense system. But you figure they really wouldn't care because, you know, it's on a great big craft with a three-mile island in the back of it. And as it worked out, they cared to a great degree about making it as small as possible. And they wanted to consume as less energy as possible. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to have it boot as fast as possible. And then granted, these were, you know, full-scale power PC things, you know, devices they were working on. And so by no means were they low power computers, but they still cared about making things as small and efficient as possible.
Yeah, and that actually goes back to the point that you made earlier, Gene, that you don't want to carry a nice little computer in a hand and a backpack full of batteries with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you do want to minimize the heat dissipation. You don't want to produce more or lose more energy than you have to.
Yeah. Well, for something like a consumer device, size and power consumption will always be paramount, because they have a certain, you know, the designer shows up with all the piercings and decides that this is going to be the form factor the device has to go in, and it's going to go in that device. And so if you take too much of your power budget up, your battery won't last long enough, and it'll be less attractive to people that were interested in the device. So
I guess what it comes down to,
the entire spectrum, I guess, is still affected by this minimization.
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is that in embedded systems, even though you have access to all those great terabytes of storage and super fast computers, what counts is selecting the right components to do the right job.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you do that, you basically handpicking what components you're going to need, what boards, what kind of power you're going to need, and you manage that hardware side of it, of your solution, which at the same time carry certain requirements for footprint, performance, and power consumption.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Right on.
I'm going to slightly change the topic, because what I wanted to talk about is what our customers or customers in embedded space in general are looking for and how they design the system. We observe that a lot of companies, we see a lot of uptake in what we call a roll-your-own Linux, where companies come to realization that Linux is open, Linux is free, it's not that hard to get it up and running on embedded device, and they start, you know, going up that steep curve of finding out what that really means, right? So they have to configure the Linux kernel, they have to play with root file system. A lot of companies have also other challenges, which is, for example, when they build something that they consider proprietary, one of the concerns that they have is that because Linux is open source, because it's licensed under GPL, how to keep the control over certain intellectual property.
So I wanted to point out that part of the reason why Maciej sounded so uncomfortable was because the BSD girl across the way who showed me her underwear earlier in the morning kept pelting us with these stuffed penguin things. And so it was really difficult. I could not
focus because some little penguins were flying your way and distracting my vision.
So these things were hit. So I'm so sorry about that. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out. That's why it sounded
very good. Very good.
Because, you know, the guy doing the podcast who helps us with the mixing is like, why don't you re-record that so it sounds better? But I wanted you to get the full flavor of the
was
of
that
the podcast.
The voice of our Paul?
Yeah. Anyway, okay, I'm sorry. Let's keep going, because this is the interesting part of the podcast. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of that depends upon whether the functionality that they're adding is actually in the operating system or in the kernel, versus something which could be considered to be a layered application on top of the kernel. Yep. It just so happens to be loosely consolidated, as Richard Stallman likes to say, inside of a piece of iron. Mm-hmm. So when the COBOL Cube first came out a few years ago, I mean, that was a neat little system. It had Linux inside of it, had a Oracle database engine inside of it. And people were asked the same question, is this going to be affected by the GPL? Is Oracle going to have to distribute the source code for the database engine?
Of course,
that would be under under Larry Ellis's cold, dead body, right? And I asked Richard about that, and he says, no, that's loosely aggregated software, and obviously that isn't supposed to be controlled by the GPL.
Right.
So you can extend that same argument to an embedded system. Now, from my viewpoint, whenever people talk about the GPL changing code and stuff, it comes down to a modicum of sense about this. Mm-hmm. If you are taking somebody else's code that they wrote, and they have a right to say what happens to that code, and you're licensed under a specific license that says this is how you distribute it, and this if you change it, everything, then you're bound to go with that license.
Yeah.
And you know, but on the other hand, if you write a piece of code, you don't use anybody else's code. This code is brand new, and it's not intermixed with anything. It's on top. Then that's code that you should have a right to say how you license it and what you do with it.
I agree, and a lot of especially manufacturers that produce the video acceleration engines, that was their concern, right? Because they have to write a device driver. They have to integrate somehow into Linux kernel. So how do they do that without really, violating a GPL license? And that was always in flux. And
well, I mean, but this is also why Linus Torvalds like to use GPL version 2 on the kernel.
Yes.
And there were plenty of device drivers, binary-only device drivers, that were able to be loaded into the Linux kernel.
Yeah.
The reason that the kernel device people didn't like that, the kernel people didn't like that, was because they had no way of updating that driver as the kernel interface has changed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they greatly preferred having source code device drivers.
Right.
On an embedded system, you have less need of that because typically the person who's building the embedded system is also controlling the device driver and is going to put the stuff all in at the same time. So, I mean, there was a real reason for doing that, but the Linux kernel made provisions not only for binary device drivers, but also for binary kernel modules.
Yes, right.
So, I mean, again, my feeling is that the person who writes the code should have the right to say what happens to it. And the person who buys the device should have the right to say whether they're going to buy that device with a closed source device driver.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
As long as the information is disclosed,
right,
that should be fair. Right.
Right.
It's a fair game. We talked to Mad Dog also about concerns that people have with GPL licensing and legal implications of open source software.
Yeah, that's huge. There are a lot of folks that, and it's typically they've either been scared by someone trying to sell them in a proprietary operating system about things that that their software will immediately become open to the public domain and everyone will be able to have the source code and most of the time that's not really true, and people don't people in general, but folks that are considering Linux for their embedded project sometimes get hung up on GPL and what it means, and it's going to form some sort of liability on their behalf that they may or may not be interested in fulfilling.
So this opinion, by any chance, is not actually a legal opinion, but here's what Mad Dog actually talked to us about.
Sure.
So this is one of the challenges that I heard many, many times from customers in embedded space, because that dictates whether they go with Linux or not, right? If they feel comfortable with the answer, they go with that. But very often, lawyers get involved, and even if the answer is yes, you can go with Linux, it's not always that simple.
Well, and I'm sure there could be lots of lawyers that will blame me for this, but I like to remind people that lawyers are advisors to people who are in business.
Yeah.
And the people in business cannot give up their responsibility to make decisions just because their lawyer said, you know, the lawyer tells you what the risks are and things like that, and whether it's legal or illegal, but, you know, the person who actually owns the business is still responsible for making the decision.
Well, the other thing, Mach, is, you know, my saying that's always stuck in my head is it's a lawyer's job to find problems. Right. They're not really into the solution business, but they're in the problem-finding business.
That's right.
And it's not a ding against the profession, but that's their orientation.
Well, except I have found some lawyers who are very good at giving solutions, too, right? You know, but you're right. I mean, their job is to protect you from making a mistake that would get you into trouble. That's their first job.
Yeah.
And then their second job. And the other thing that, of course, the problem is, you know, if a lawyer tells you something which they think is a perfectly viable answer and it does get you in trouble, then, you know, they end up with egg on their face. So
yes.
They're conservative. Oh,
no argument at all.
What are the kind of like obstacles that you see today in adoption of Linux as a platform of choice for both desktop and, let's say, an embedded device, if you have that insight?
Okay, so when I was back at Digital Equipment Corporation, I learned a very important lesson when it comes to operating systems and their acceptance by various people, okay? We used to have ISVs, independent software vendors, come to us all the time and say, I can't port my application to your particular version of Unix because you don't have this development tool, you don't have this compiler, you don't have this on there. And then we would go through all these hoops to get that particular development thing on there or whatever, and they still wouldn't port their application. So after a while, one of these guys took me aside and said, Mad Dog, I'm going to tell you a secret. He says, it's all about volume, okay? He says, and it really doesn't make any difference at all when we tell you about the obstacles of putting your stuff on there. If you come to us and say, next week you're going to sell 10 million copies of your operating system and we're going to get 5% penetration of our product onto your system, he says, we will tell you that we have had it working in-house for like 3 months and we're all set to go.
Yeah.
It says it's all about volume.
Business side actually drives whether it's doable or not.
Absolutely.
That's always been the case, I guess.
Absolutely. And on the opposite side, you could have the easiest port in the world.
Yeah.
But if these people don't see a volume and a sustainable volume, they're not going to port.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's a very good reason for this. So from time to time, we'd have this big contract. And the person who had the big contract would come to us and say, hey, I need to have this application on there. So we go to the vendor, we convince them to do the port. And sure, they would sell 10,000 copies of their product on our platform. But that was the last copy they ever sold. And now they're stuck through all the rest of time in updating that. Then when they update, they have to qualify it, you know, and all this stuff for, you know, this one customer. And so people say, no, I'm sorry, I've been stuck with that before, right? I want to see a continuing volume. I want to see continuing sales. And if I don't see that, I'm just not going to go down. I'll walk away from the sale rather than get stuck in that situation. So now that we understand it's all about volume, now we can go back to the original days of Linux coming out, and people say, and people about the year 2000 say, hey, we're going to jump on this, we're going to put Linux on all these workstations and notebooks, and everybody was happy. Take a look at the IBM ThinkPad line. How many ThinkPads are out there in their entire line, now Lenovo, in their entire line of ThinkPads? It's the X series, the T series.
A series,
and, you know, just a lot. And in each series, it's a whole bunch of them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So think about how many systems that IBM had to make sure that Linux worked on, and it worked on with a set of peripherals, and it was all tuned to that. That's a huge amount of testing.
Yeah.
So they put it out there with all these different systems, and then the Linux people come along and say, okay, we'll take three, right? And that's a lot of expense. So it took some time. It's a catch-22 situation. You know, you get more people who are interested in Linux on the laptops, then more vendors come out and put Linux on. There'll be more ISVs who report, so forth. And it keeps in this circle. We keep gaining more and more and more people, more and more and more sales. There's more and more people who go back and revisit the issue again and say, okay, we'll now put it on more systems and we'll have more applications.
Yeah.
And the other thing you can see is happening is Intel opened up their video drivers, ATI opened up their video drivers, you know, NVIDIA is now sweating.
Under pressure.
Yeah. Sweating because they have to say, are we going to keep ours closed and lose out on these sales, particularly to our competitors?
Right.
Or are we going to go ahead and open it up?
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of things. And it comes down to the point where a company is willing to lose 5% of their sales to their competitors to not do a port or not serve something. They're not willing to lose 15 or 20% or 30% of their sales to their competitors.
Right.
They're just not willing to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as the Linux market continues to grow, there'll be more and more people say, oh yeah, of course I've done a port. We're working for like 3 months now, and here it is.
Right.
And it'll happen, and things will come up.
And one of the challenging pieces that you've mentioned, I guess, even before we started our recording, is the tool chain. And how difficult it is to build the right tool chain for the job, right? And then harness that tool chain in the build environment to do the right things. So if you decide to do to modify the platform, to develop your own application, you want to have a good set of tools as a...
Well, and this actually is a place where some of the vendors say that's their value add, right? I mean, you know, the GPL says you have to make all the source code available so somebody can fix something. But that doesn't mean that you have to make your entire build environment available for them. Mm-hmm. And while they may be able to duplicate a certain amount of your build environment, the speed, the ease of use, the stuff, and building this stuff is one of your value adds.
Yeah, and I know what we see too is for people that work on embedded systems typically are under deadline pressure, especially the folks that are out there that do consumer electronics devices. There's a very small window, and having open source lets them get in there, and even if there's a problem or a defect, they can manage that much easier than dealing with an external vendor.
Right, but so let's take the two of these things and put them together.
Yeah.
There were companies like Monte Vista, and all of them that were doing embedded real-time stuff, and they would license out their tools to you and things like that, so you could fix everything. And yet they were still there that if you ran into a big problem, that they had the expertise to help you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a mixture of these different things. That if they did get busy, you had a choice of being able to stay with them or go get somebody else to help you out. But that was your choice, your business decision, right? Not the business decision of somebody else.
Right. Yeah. No, that is a good point. I mean, that's why a lot of people dig in and take embedded Linux, because they do have that control. I mean, from a business perspective, how they go out and solve things is, people take different routes, but
it's all about control.
But it's still your pick. You still have control.
Yes.
It's all about control.
You couldn't see us, but as he's telling us, our heads are bobbing back up and forth, and it's not...
Back and forth.
Yeah, back and forth. And it wasn't Tim Horton's donut and caffeine rush. I mean, really, that's why you get into... Linux, because you do have a degree of control that is unprecedented in software.
Absolutely. You can change every single line in the GPL license code. You can alter it. You can adopt it for your specific needs.
Yeah.
And you can provide it back to your customers or other users.
Yeah. And you can make a choice about how you want to do that. I mean, you can either have that expertise in-house. You can go and contract out that work out to somebody. And because it's GPL, make sure you get back the finished work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that level of control is fantastic. And I think that's why... I was going to say, that is why people are so attracted to Linux and embedded, because you need a high level of control, and only Linux offers you that amount
level
of control.
And that, back to what we actually talked to Mad Dog about earlier, if you do want to protect some of the your own company's IP, you can in Linux, using still Linux.
Sure.
It's just that you have to follow certain rules, certain guidelines, and you're perfectly fine.
Yeah. So we had a lot more talk time for Mad Dog, and I think that's all we have for today's episode. We have a couple other interviews that we're just going to release as well, probably soon after this one comes out, from other folks we talked to that said very fortunate, wonderfully nice people, and great fascinating topics they cover.
We have I believe 20 more minutes of material from recordings with Mad Dog, but
sure.
Given the time that we had for this podcast. I think that we've passed on to you the most interesting parts. Others, you know, we were just chatting about other topics, but hopefully what you've heard from Mad Dog and us, you'll find interesting. Okay. There's actually one other recording that we want to share with you.
Before the microphone was on, we did get in, before we knew the microphone was on, we did get on his secret retirement plan. So
here goes the secret.
Yeah.
I'm actually working on my retirement plan, which is called Mad Dog's Mansion for Math, Music, Microcomputing, and Microbrewing.
Wow, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, the plan's pretty interesting. And the thing is, I've noticed that whenever the computing industry is on the downturn, the drinking industry seems to be on the upturn. Students should always have something that they could...
Yeah, you're completely balanced out there.
Or it's something to make money, you know. So, and there's a lot of stuff to it. There's things like an incubator and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff to it. But it's a very serious thing, and I'm working on a business plan for it. Uh-huh. I hope to do it all with other people's money, which is always a secret of doing business, right?
Well, that's a big step, I guess. Yeah. So once again, thanks for listening. Again, hopefully the secret will stay still a secret. And hopefully you did enjoy this particular recording from the Linux Fest in Toronto.
Hey, we have lots more material that it's going to be coming out as we get it prepped.
Right. So along with this particular episode, there will be probably a couple others that we'll release. Mm-hmm. But in the next week or so, we'll release a few more.
Yeah. And if you have questions or comments, please send them to us at podcast@timesys.com.
You can also visit us at timesys.com, find more information about the podcast that we've recorded in the past.
Yeah, I think they still made it hard. You still have to go to like timesys.com/services/podcast, and it's the content's there.
Well, but if you have any questions or suggestions on topics that you would like to hear from us, please let us know.
Yeah, you know what we should do, Maciej? Maybe we should have the listener mail episode coming, because we do get a lot of mail and we try to reply back, but some of it I think is probably interesting enough to read over for other folks that listen in. So maybe we'll do that after we sort of work through our Ontario Linux Fest material.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks a lot.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.